Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome to what we made is a three-part series on Shabbos in the kitchen. You'll notice the first letter on the sheet is the letter G. And this is not a new system. That's because we started this in previous years, and we've done a number of different aspects of Shabbos in the kitchen. They are all online. You can catch up on those if you'd like. We're going to pick up now specifically with some of the issues regarding cooking. I had avoided those the first time that we did this series, even though that was one of the most significant and most of interest to many people, figuring that that would get you to keep on coming back. And we will actually now start that tonight. I specifically did this in three sessions, which means we don't have to be as rushed as I was when I tried this the last time. We'll do a little bit tonight, and then we'll have a couple of more to continue. This topic of cooking in the kitchen is much more than what should be done in an hour, or even two, or even three. So this is not going to be the most in-depth. I'm giving you a heads up right from the start. We're going to cover all the basics, I hope. And the goal will be that you'll be familiar enough to ask the right questions in your kitchen. You'll know the basics, you'll feel comfortable, confident with the basics, with the general rules. And then as the details come up, we can't cover all the details, you'll be comfortable, however, as it is, asking those questions. So tonight we're going to do, I know everything's going to try to be as practical as possible. Tonight's going to be a little bit of background to understand, and then we will get into the more practical things a little bit tonight, and then subsequent weeks as well. Okay, enough for my introduction, let's begin. Baking is cooking specifically with heat, without a water medium, in the sense of in an oven. Roasting is a little bit different. Roasting is specifically in fire, but for our purposes we'll put those together. You have the concept of baking and you have the concept of cooking. Cooking is in a water medium in which you have your regular pot, water-based, or any other type of juice on top of a fire, and then you cook inside the pot. They were both done in the construction and functioning of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle in the desert. They would actually cook dyes that were used to make the cloth, the different colors in the cloth of the aspects of the Mishkan. They would actually cook them in a pot of water. They would bake bread. Both of those became encompassed in the same general malacha, the same principal category of the 39 forbidden activities. The definition is as follows, as I have you on your sheets: changing the physical structure of any food, liquid, or even inedible material through heat. That is the definition of this activity, in which you take the property of an item, and it doesn't even have to be food. We're not going to be talking about the aspects that are non-food. It would apply to a metal, for example. If you were to heat up a metal, that made it soft, but that's not relevant to us. If you're doing that in your kitchen on Shabbos, we have other problems, and that's not for us tonight. We're specifically focusing on food items. So when you change the property of a food through the medium of heat, that is our problem, and that's the definition we're going to use throughout this evening of that's what we're trying to avoid. Now, many of the practical applications in our kitchen are on the rabbinic level, meaning that we're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, but not only are we not allowed to cook on Shabbos, that wouldn't be so bad. If all that we couldn't do was cook on Shabbos, we'd be fine, and none of you would be showing up here tonight because you wouldn't have any problems. But what the sages did to make sure that we don't cook on Shabbos is they forbade couple of other major categories, which we will start tonight and discuss more next week, which is leaving food on an open fire even if it was already cooked. Talk about that more later. And returning food that is cold to a fire, which would be applicable on Shabbos morning. You want to take it out of your refrigerator and warm it up for Shabbos. That's going to be complicated. In order to understand that, which is really what's relevant to us, how do we keep our food warm Shabbos day? That's what everybody wants to know. But in order to understand how that's going to work, we need to focus first tonight to understand what is within the realm of cooking, what is not cooking, what is permissible, what is not permissible, and then from there we will expand into the other areas. So that's what we're going to be focused on tonight, which is actual cooking. And the reason why I want to stress this is because when we get to the other issues of rabbinic issues, the first question we always need to ask is, am I actually cooking something or not? If I'm cooking something, then we get stuck right in the beginning. You can't cook on Shabbos. If I'm not cooking, then I can go to my next tier of, is this rabbinically prohibited? Is this okay? But the first question you always have to ask about every activity is, am I cooking something? Am I baking something? That's step one. When we understand all of that, then we'll know how to fit everything else in, and that's what we're going to focus on tonight. Okay, let's move on. Number one, takes time to violate. The interesting aspect of this malacha of cooking or baking is that it's not an instantaneous kind of thing. You put something in the oven, It doesn't cook right away. Since the definition of cooking is physically changing the property of the item. You took dough and you made it into bread. Took cold water and you brought it to a boil. We're going to see what's going to define the changing of the characteristics or the changing properties. But it has to actually change physical properties from one thing to another to be considered cooking. How do we define that? What makes something be considered cooked? So here we're going to define things differently, whether or not they're a liquid or whether or not they are a solid. When it comes to a liquid, what's going to define the change is measured by how hot it got, how hot it gets as you're cooking it. You take a pot of water, it's cold, put it on the stove. When is that considered cooked? What has to happen to that water that now, even on a Tuesday, when do you say the water is cooked? Well, that's relevant, not so relevant on Tuesday, but we'd care about that on Shabbos. When we define the change in a liquid, it has to achieve the level of what we call the Yad Soled Desvo, which is the Hebrew meaning for if your hand were to touch it, it would recoil in the natural instinct from the heat, that you don't want to feel the burn. When it gets to be that hot, that's considered now that the liquid has been cooked. How hot is that? So many different opinions. It's, as often is the case, the Gemara, when it defines these things, gives us a term and doesn't tell us an exact measure of degrees. So Yad Soled Desvo is the amount of thing. You put your hand and you recoil it back. So the range is between about 110 to 160 degrees. So what does that mean? Doesn't mean anything to me. How hot is that? So just to give you a sense, your general bath water for a child is about 99 to 100 degrees. When you put your hand in, the child doesn't recoil in it. The child is fine. That's about 100 degrees or less. It's just warmer than the child's body temperature. When you're at that temperature that you would bathe a child in this water, you're not yet at a problem that would not be considered cooking. If you had warmed up water to that temperature on Shabbos, you haven't yet cooked it because it's not yet hot enough. A hot tea straight out of the urn can get beyond that, about 165 degrees. That will burn your mouth if you drink it without letting it cool. That's beyond that, just to give you a sense as to where that temperature is. But be that as it may, that's the status of what's considered change when we're talking about liquids. Solids, how cooked is it? And here the term that's used is a term that's called Kamaichel ben Jusoi. Ben Jusoi was a certain ganav, a thief who used to eat his food on the run. He would cook things very quickly, and as soon as it was just edible, he would eat it and then take off to his next victim. How cooked is that? Between a third and a half cooked. Once the food is at that point, it's considered already cooked. Now, we'll get back to this as this comes into practical application later, but that's our starting point, is just defining what it means to cook. To cook liquids is to get it to a temperature somewhere between 110 and 160 degrees. To get a solid to be considered cooked, it's either a half or a third cooked. Once it's reached that point, it's now considered cooked. Fine, that's our background. Let's get into our practical applications as far as this goes. Now, when we talk about cooking with water, there are a number of different ways in which we cook. Oh, I shouldn't say that way. The way we basically cook is you put water in a pot, you put the pot on the fire, and you're cooking. But as far as how that process will continue, there are a number of different elements that are used. Let's define some terms and how it relates to us. The pot that's on the fire is referred to as a kli rishon, literally translated as the first vessel. That is now on the fire. That's the pot that has been affected by the heating element itself. That pot, as long as it is above itself, that 110 to 160 degree term, will cook anything and everything that's put in it. Which means you can't put on Shabbos anything into a kli rishon while it's still hot, even if it's been removed from the fire. So if you've had a pot that's been on the fire, your soup pot, you put your soup on the fire, 5 o'clock Erev Shabbos, runs to a nice boil before Shabbos, even if you turn the fire up right before you light candles, that pot has been sitting on the fire, even though it's not on the fire anymore, that is your classic kli rishon. It's your primary vessel that's been sitting on the fire. You may not put anything directly into that pot of soup, spices, whatever you think you need, salt. That pot is out of the equation because it's been on the fire directly, and as long as it has that heat still in the pot, it will cook, and we don't cook on Shabbos, and therefore, even if your food has already been cooked from before, we just don't put anything into a kli rishon. We don't have that many kli rishons on Shabbos. The only times we actually deal with them are Friday nights, went with your soup pot that's been on the stove, on the fire before Shabbos. Your water urn, for example, if you wanted to refill your water urn on Shabbos, so you say, even if I don't have one with an electric light, so can I just add some water to my electric urn on Shabbos that's plugged in? And of course not, because that's your Kli Rishon. That's going to cook the water, so there's no adding of water, which is why you can't use your hot water tap on Shabbos, because when you use your hot water tap, cold water comes into your hot water urn that's in your basement, and which is also then going to get cooked, which is why you can't use your hot water tap on Shabbos as well, because that all is going to add water directly into a Kli Rishon, which is going to get cooked, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Just parenthetically, on Yontif, when you are allowed to cook, so therefore, if you were to add water to your hot water urn, as long as it doesn't have all those electric lights or different things, that's not a problem, because you're allowed to cook water on Yontif. You're allowed to use hot water out of your tap on Yontif, because even though cold water is now going to be pushed into your big water urn in your basement, it's not a problem because you're allowed to cook that water on Yontif. That's just parenthetical as to how that will manifest itself. Okay, so you can add things to your supot. There are many other ways which are considered cooking. This is in letter C. Any aspect of accelerating the cooking process is also going to be within this prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. And there are a number of different ways, which we're going to mention now, and these are going to come up again in subsequent issues when we discuss the rabbinic level, but it's good to just have them on the table already now. Some of them are obvious, but it's worth stating it as we're going anyway. Moving an uncooked cholent closer to the flame. For those, I know that I've noticed, this is just anecdotally, most cholent pots today are in their own crock pots, and we don't deal with cholent pots on a blach anymore. For those of you who still use an old pot and you put it on the blach, it's totally fine. So if it's not directly over the flame, moving a cholent pot that hasn't been fully cooked and moving it closer to the flame would be accelerating the cooking process and would be just as forbidden. Removing water from an uncooked urn. If you remember, 10 minutes before you light candles, the urn is almost empty. And you quickly fill it with cold water, and it hasn't yet reached a boil. This is not so practical, because by the time you wanted to take out water, but if it weren't to be, it's important just to note, to have it in mind, if your water in your urn has not yet reached a boil, because you filled it right before Shabbos, after you light candles, and you say, whew, what a tough week. I just can't wait for that cup of coffee to sit down and wait for everyone to come home from shul. You're not allowed to remove, after you lit Shabbos candles, a cup of water from the urn, which you probably wouldn't want anyway because it's not hot. But just to keep it in mind, that would not be allowed to be done, because now that you've taken water out of the pot, it's made it easier to boil the rest, and therefore you can't do that on Shabbos. Yeah.
But once that urn has come up
to a boil, then it's fine. Right. Stirring the uncooked cholent pot. So if your food is not yet fully cooked, when you stir it, by stirring it and moving everything around, that will also accelerate the cooking process, which is why we don't stir the uncooked cholent pot, and that's even after being removed from the flame. I want to stress here, we're talking about the uncooked cholent pot, meaning stirring will help cook it. So if it's Friday night, you got the cholent up right before Shabbos, and you're looking at the pot, and it doesn't look like you need to mix it up a little bit, and you want to, so you take it, even if you take it out of the crock pot holder, you're not allowed to stir it on Shabbos if it's not already fully cooked, because the act of stirring it will increase the speed in which it cooks, and you'll move things around, and therefore we try to avoid stirring anything, even if it's been removed from the flame, until it's been fully cooked by Shabbos morning already. Then you can do that. This is an issue for those of you who either yourselves or have men in the family who like to take cholent Friday night. If the cholent is put up close to Shabbos and it's not fully cooked yet, before Shabbos, this becomes an issue as far as dealing with that cholent pot. As is the next one also, spooning out uncooked food. If you have those who like to eat cholent Friday night, make sure that the cholent goes up earlier in the day on Friday, so that by the time Friday night comes, we can assume that it's been already fully cooked. Otherwise, you cannot spoon out, because for the same reason as taking out water from the urn before it's been cooked, if you start removing things from a pot, then if you put it back in, you're just going to cause it to cook faster, and then you would have a problem doing that as well. So spooning out uncooked food, we don't do. And I'll mention, I have in parentheses here, even if it is fully cooked, we don't spoon anything out of a pot that's still over the flame. So if you have a pot of, if your soup pot, you left your flame on, and you have the soup Friday night over the flame, we don't spoon anything. Just part of one of the things that we just don't do on Shabbos is spooning something out of a pot that's still on a flame. So let's say your soup was cooked before Shabbos, you put it on Friday afternoon, but you left it on, it's still on the lach, it's right on the flame. When it comes time to serving it, it has to be removed before you actually spoon it out. Same thing with the cholent pot, has to be taken out if you want it. This is even when it's fully cooked, we don't deal with pots that are on the flame. Yeah?
Well, you could leave it on there if you had turned it off, though, before you left it.
Correct. Once it's off. And as I'm saying, if it's still on, it's like a crack pot is still considered on. If you left the blech on because you wanted it for the next day, you can't spoon something out of a pot while it's on the flame.
So but with the cholent pot, if you take it out of the elements, and you then they take that, and then you can put it back in and save it for...
Generally, the answer to that is yes, there's a way to do that. We'll talk about that more next week in terms of putting things back. But as far as taking out, when it's on the flame, we don't take out. Yeah?
What about, you said over here about moving something like closer to the flame. If you have your soup pot on a blast and you want to move it away from the flame because you see that it's going to...
Yeah, that's fine.
You can move it away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back to the hot water. Is it okay to refill a hot water pot right before Shabbos?
Yeah, so you can. There are those who would be opposed to that. We're going to talk a little bit about that shahiyah, as far as like leaving an open, as far as putting food on an open flame and leaving it there. There's no real open flame, and there's no way to adjust it. So technically speaking, it's fine, because it's like any malacha that you do where you start it before Shabbos and it continues over Shabbos. Like you could turn on a light before Shabbos and you use the light the whole Shabbos because the malacha was done beforehand. Similarly with cooking, since your action is done before Shabbos, which is plugging it in or filling it up, whatever it is, even though it continues on Shabbos, it's fine. There's technically no problem with that because there's no way to adjust the urn, there's no way to stoke the coals, it doesn't exist. So the reasons why we generally wouldn't leave a pot over an open flame that's not cooked wouldn't apply to any of that, other than the fear that you'll take it out before it's fully cooked. But that's it's ideal not to do that, but it's not a problem to do that.
And then that means that so it's still the one
urn to run for Shabbos is still not hot, and now it takes hours, so it gets really hot. I'm allowed
to then drink from that urn later on, even if I know it's not really hot. After Shabbos,
is it still going to
be?
It's going to cook and
it's still. Keep on cooking for
the next
4 hours.
So that's where there's an issue, because it will cook faster because you took out your cup. That's the problem. In other words, you are actually increasing the Bishul process by taking out water, and therefore that is a problem. If you have one of those urns that take 4 hours, then that's one of your early Friday checklist items of getting the urn up beforehand, because otherwise then, even though it would be hot enough where you'd like to drink it, but if it's still going to get hotter, then you can't take out the water for that reason. That is correct, yeah.
But that all has to be very hot before Shabbos ever begins.
Right?
I see we have here half or third full on the solids, right? I've always made things way ahead, only because I was afraid if it wasn't cooked all the way through, I was cooking on Shabbos. So what is my leniency there?
With what?
To how far something has to be cooked before Shabbos begins.
So it can cook on what are you doing? You're cooking like a chicken in the oven?
Any solid, no, in a crock pot or whatever.
Yeah.
Anything.
So you're allowed to continue cooking. We're going to get to that later tonight. You can continue to cook. That's when you violate it. Like, it's considered cooked at that point. It will continue cooking after that, and you can't do things after that also while it's still cooking. And then we'll talk about what you can do before Shabbos and allow the process to continue on. We'll get to that a little bit later. So, yeah?
Real quickly, if you have a little baby, water is already boiled, and you'd like to heat up the bottom. Are you allowed to do that?
Yes, and we'll get to that exactly how. It's on your sheet.
Can we clarify that a bit about the is there a deadline to put on your chart as long as before Shabbos?
Yeah, we're gonna get to that a little bit. We'll still get to that.
Okay. One question about the water. Whatever you cooked in a hot pot, you can't it's liquid and you can't add to it or. What if you have a pot that's the same temperature exactly? It's the same, when you want to just combine them so you get rid of one pot.
So you want to pour from one pot into another pot?
Yeah, and it's the same temperature.
Yeah, so that's going to be next week's discussion. And you want to pour out of an urn into another urn?
Yeah, it's
yeah, it would be
pot.
Yeah.
It's just you
well, not see the problem with that is because you're pouring into something that's on the fire.
No, I mean you're taking it off the fire. I know you can't turn it.
Oh, and then you're going to put it back in? Yeah, you may do it. There are ways, that's like adding to a cholent pot. It's like taking the cholent pot out of the crock pot, putting it under an urn, pouring the hot water in, and then putting it back in, which we'll see next week you're allowed to do.
It should be the same temperature.
Yeah, and we'll get to that next week. Okay, just a couple of things to don't let us see. Replacing a lid while over the fire. Sometimes there also is a problem. You can't take off a lid. You want to see the chont. You want to know if you need to add water to it or not. So the chont's up there. You can't tell through the lid. Is it burning? Is it not burning? Does it need water? Does it not need water? So you pull off the lid. Okay, fine. Now the lid is off. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with taking off the lid because that doesn't increase the cooking process. It actually slows the cooking process down. But now you realize you're holding the lid and everything looks good. You want to put the lid back on. So you can't put the lid back on while the chillin' pot is in the crock pot. Now you got to take the crock pot out, put the lid back on, and then we'll go through the process of putting crock pot back in. But there's no putting on a lid on something that's on the fire. And closing an oven door is another big issue, which we'll get to a little bit later also, but touching on it now, same reason, it accelerates the cooking process. If the oven is still on, and you close the oven door, all you're doing is you're making it hotter than it was while it was open. Opening an oven is fine. That decreases the heat. But if you now wanted to close the oven again, you have a problem. But we're going to do ovens, as we'll see, just create all sorts of other problems, and we generally stay away from them while they're on, except for your Shabbos mode oven, because of all the other issues that go into having an oven. Okay, but those are just the concept of accelerating the cooking process. Anything with, even if you're not actually cooking, but if what your action is going to make the item cook faster, that becomes a problem. Okay, so far so good?
Yep.
Am I moving too fast?
If your chont's already cooked, can you put the lid back on?
Not while it's on the fire. That's one of the things, while things are on the
Shabbos morning, even if you take the lid off.
Right. If you want to put a lid back on, yeah, I'm pretty sure that even though technically speaking, that should be fine because it's already fully cooked, but in the same way as we don't stir things that are on the fire, and that's just, again, the way that we deal with food on a fire is just we stay away from things while it's on the fire. Even though, again, I don't think there's any cooking because it's already fully cooked, but it's like one of those things that all of a sudden we'll just say, don't do that. Don't stir once on the fire, don't put the lid back on the fire, don't throw things into it when it's on the fire. We just, when it's on the fire, we pretty much steer clear of that. Okay, pouring from a Kli Rishon. So now we have, we're going to go from all the different levels down, from the actual Kli Rishon, the pot that's on the fire, to what happens to this boiling water all the way through the steps of the process, what we can and can't do with it. So the first one is pouring from the Kli Rishon, which means I have my water urn. Most common example scenario of this is the urn is plugged in, that's a Kli Rishon. Now I pour from the urn into my coffee mug. So that hot water, as it comes out, will continue to cook, just like anything put into the urn would be cooked by the water in that urn. So the water that comes out of the urn, if it lands on something, will also cook that. So if I have a slice of lemon, for example, in my coffee mug, and I pour directly from my water urn, and it lands, the water stream directly onto my slice of lemon, that slice of lemon will become cooked from that hot water. Now, it doesn't cook all the way through. It only cooks a outer layer of the solid food, but that would therefore be prohibited to do if you were going to have your slice of lemon with your coffee or with your tea. You could not pour that directly from the urn. Now, when it comes to liquids, meaning if I have my cup of water, let's say I have a cup of cold water. I don't want cold water because it's too cold. I actually want a little bit lukewarm. So if I pour directly from my urn into my cup, so the only time that would be considered a problem is if the water would become so heated that it reached above 110 degrees. Meaning, how much does a stream of hot water from an urn cook? Only the outer layer when it comes to a solid food. To a liquid food, it has to be able to actually cook the liquid. So if I have water let's say you had a cup of coffee that was sitting out and it got cold. You want to drink cold coffee, but you don't have to have it hot, just a little bit of lukewarm. You want to add some hot water to your tea, whatever it may be, to warm it up a little bit. If you're only adding so much water that it will not get your leftover tea to the point of 110 degrees, then there's no problem because there's no cooking going on over here. And even though the water is coming directly from the hot water urn into your cup, but it's not going to get it hot, it's actually not a problem. Dangerous to play that game only because you got to make sure that you actually don't get it that hot. But if you're adding just a little bit to take away the chill from whatever cup that you have, that's actually not a problem. If you want to remove the chill for a milk, for a, it deals with babies. You have a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old that wants a sippy cup of milk, but they don't like it so cold.
If you have a cup that's a little bit wet, that's got some water in it, and you add hot
Right. That would be a problem, right. Now, because the cold water, assuming that it's cold, so we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, but assuming if the cup is wet, and you then fill that directly from the hot water urn, you will then be cooking those little droplets. That is an issue, and that's an issue for when you have, like in my house, we have our official cup next to the water urn that we're going to use as a cliche, and then to pour into a third cup. But after it gets used the first time, the second time, there's liquid left in there. And then that becomes an issue. Once that cools off, when you refill that directly from the urn, that will be then cooking those droplets.
So why do you have to use
a cliche to make a cup? We'll get that in a second. That's our next thing. Okay. Is that clear? I felt like, I don't know if that was clear in terms of the eroi, the pouring from the urn will cook a solid a little bit, and we'll cook a liquid if it gets hot. But if it doesn't get hot, then nothing took place, and therefore that becomes okay. So if you wanted to add, now the last example I was just mentioning, if you have a sippy cup of milk for a 2-year-old, and they don't like it so cold, and you want to add a drop of hot water, it's okay to add directly from the urn into your sippy cup of milk, because all you're going to do is take away the chill, but that milk is never going to get to 110 degrees. It's just going to get a little bit warmer, and it's actually okay to pour directly from the urn into your sippy cup of milk. Yeah?
No, with tea or coffee, if you put the water in first, and then you put the tea bag in.
Yeah, we're getting to that now.
Oh, okay.
I use a cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so from the urn, I have a cup of some sort that I turn upside down after I pour that into a cliche.
Okay.
In hoping that it's dry, but that's not correct, and I really should wipe that out, even though it's upside down and sitting there for a while.
If there's noticeable liquid in there, then yeah. I mean, if sometimes you know, you have to be like crazy, and if there's nothing in there, so but if you see there's like liquid left in the bottom, then that would become cooked if you refill that directly from the urn, right?
So isn't it damp? That's still.
I don't know if it's just damp. If there's no accumulation of liquid, I don't think. Yeah, I don't know if it's damp. But like sometimes you actually have like on the bottom, you have you know like something you could pour out.
A puddle.
Right.
If you have a puddle.
Right, a puddle.
Something you could drink, not mist.
Yeah, if it's just a mist, I wouldn't. Okay, now let's talk about a klisheni. So a klisheni is going to have a number of applications. A klisheni is the second vessel, meaning the cup that the liquid went to from the urn, from your soup pot, from whatever it was that you have that was on the fire, into the second cup. So I pour from my urn into my mug. My mug is now an official klisheni. Now, a klisheni is a little complicated because the Gemara says explicitly that a klisheni does not have the intensity necessary to cook. Meaning, once it's been removed from the original pot that has the heating element, which is my urn, and now it's in an isolated mug, and it's been affected by the air as it left my urn, travels through the air into my new mug, it is not as intense a heat, even though it might still be hot, and you can burn yourself with that cup of tea or coffee, but it doesn't have the intensity to cook anymore. So that technically speaking, you could put whatever you would like into that mug, because nothing that goes into that mug can be cooked, because we're talking about a klisheni, and that second vessel doesn't have the intensity to be able to cook. The problem is that the Gemara says that there's an exception to that rule. And the exception to the rule is what the Gemara calls kale habishol, things which are easily cooked. Very thin pieces of salted fish is what the Gemara specifically mentions. Those kinds of items which are so easily cooked, they can even be cooked if you were to put it into a klisheni, into that second vessel. So that most items would not cook in a second in that mug, and some items would. Which leaves us, 1,000 years later, with the problem of, well, what does and what doesn't? There are only certain things which are mentioned explicitly on both sides of the equation, and many of the postgame are very hesitant to then start classifying things as to whether or not it is or is not. And therefore, we generally avoid, because of this, putting things into your klisheni. Again, your klisheni is your mug that came directly from the water, from the urn into your mug. Even though that's now a klisheni, it's not directly heated by any heating elements, but unless it's been explicitly mentioned as something which does not cook easily, we generally will shy away from that and assume a stringent approach and be afraid of putting things directly in. So, for example, a tea bag, which seems to be one of the easier items to cook, it's very thin, it's very light, if you were to put a tea bag directly into a kli sheni, meaning you took your urn, you filled up your mug, and you put your tea bag into that, that would certainly be a concern that you're going to cook the tea bag, because even though the kli sheni generally doesn't cook things, but that it would cook because it's so thin, it's so light, that's how it's made. So we would not put a tea bag into your mug because of the fear that you would be cooking in that kli sheni. Water is specifically mentioned as something in the Gemara that does not cook in a kli sheni. Water is difficult to bring to a boil, as we all know that you have to, even when you put it on a flame, you have to sit and watch it for 10 minutes, and if you watch it, it could take up to 15 minutes until it finally boils. It's hard to cook water. So water does not cook in a kli sheni. So if you were to take your mug directly out of the urn, your kli sheni, that you could add water to all you'd like and nothing would ever happen. You could not cook the water in that mug. So if you take your cup of Shabbos morning, you want to make a coffee, you put hot water in a mug, and you're just like drinking hot water, whatever it is, you take it's too hot. So how do you cool down your mug that's too hot? So add cold water to it. It's not a problem, because the mug is a kli sheni, and the Gemara is explicit that water cannot be cooked in a kli sheni. So once you have your water in your mug, if you want to make tea out of it, now you're cooking a tea bag. But if you want to add water to it, then it's totally fine, and you can add cold water or an ice cube or anything you want to that mug, because it cannot be cooked in that mug as it's in its state of being a kli sheni.
Confused.
Yeah.
About making tea.
So far, I've only told you what you can't do. Mm-hmm. Meaning, when you take water out of the urn into your mug, your mug is now a kli sheni, it's your second vessel, and a second vessel will cook easily cooked items. Mm-hmm. Since we assume that a tea bag is an easily cooked item, you may not put that tea bag into your mug right now, because then you'd be cooking the tea leaves that are inside the tea bag. If you wanted to add water to that steaming hot cup, you would be allowed to, because water is something which does not cook easily and would therefore not be cooked by being put into that second vessel.
How about instant coffee?
So instant coffee is going to be okay. Instant coffee I'm going to get to. So the instant coffee gets into other issues, let me get to one other thing and we'll do that. Instant coffee has already been cooked once. The easiest thing to do is to avoid the problem and put it into a kli shlishi with the instant teas and the coffees, because of the fact that they've already been cooked, which makes it a whole lot easier to deal with.
If there's already little droplets of water in the kli shlishi, you can't pour the water directly from the kli shlishi, but you can do it the other way around. So
what does it speak at? What does it mean the other way around?
If you can pour water from the kli rishon into a dry kli sheni and
right.
Pour water.
Cold water, right.
Okay.
Right, understand why? In other words, because when the cold water is already in the cup, now you're dealing with hot water directly from an urn into the cup, which is coming from a kli rishon directly, which has the ability to cook, and it will heat up that water to that point. But when the water is already in the kli sheni, now it's shifted from being poured from a kli rishon into its own new status of a kli sheni, and it loses the ability to cook, and therefore that's right, you could add the cold water to that point. Okay,
back up
for
a minute.
Yeah.
They had that and it was a cool cup. You couldn't add the hot water in there, it would boil. I mean, even though it doesn't cook, it would make that water too hot if there's cold water in the cup.
You can add to it as long as the cold water will not get up to 110 degrees. That's right. So again, it's always just thinking of like, what's going to happen when I do this?
Uh-huh.
So if it's a liquid, what's going to be the status of my liquid, my cold cup, after I pour the hot water in? If you're just pouring a little bit in, then that's also okay. That's right. Okay, so just to finish in that kli sheni, so all the things that you want to add, if you want to add milk, sugar, salt, all those foods, this is letter E3. I'm in my kli sheni still. I took hot water directly from my urn into my mug. The status of a kli sheni. Things which have already been cooked, your milk, which has already been pasteurized, sugar, salt, all those items in the way that things are. Yeah?
Sugar has not been cooked.
Sugar.
And sweet and low has not been cooked.
Are you sure? In the way in its processing. I'm pretty sure. I saw that. I got that because one of the sermons I was looking at, maybe the way that it's made is wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it said that explicitly. But most of the things, there are different ways that we process things in today. So I will check that up. I took some of the songs that I saw and their word for it in terms of the way the things are processed. I assume that they did
and
more research.
Some of the sugar, and it's possible when they make sweet low of those artificial things, they might be
so I'm taking the word for it, but I don't mind. I'll check that up and we'll get back next week just in terms of as far as what it's been cooked. But the general assumption is you can add it to a klisheni, regardless, but I believe the reason is because it's already, it has been cooked, and therefore the status of a klisheni, if you couldn't put it into a kli rishon while it's on the fire, but once it's been removed in the mug, then we would allow that.
And more changing its form. I thought you couldn't change the form. Solid,
you can't do that in when you're going to be left with a noticeable liquid in the end. Meaning, if you took something solid and right, and you let it melt on its own somehow, but when it goes into a liquid and then it dissolves into that liquid already there, then it doesn't have that problem. That's why you can add an ice cube to a bowl of soup, for example, which we're going to get to. So leaving an ice cube in even leaving an ice cube in an empty bowl, many posts can say it's fine. But that idea of changing the form where it's not noticeable that you change the form because it went into something else and then becomes enveloped and dissolved into that doesn't have that problem.
Okay.
But I will check on the sugar and salt.
I'm more worried about the salt.
As far as that goes. Okay, the next step is what we have is a kli shlishi. If you were to take the mug which came from the urn into the mug and you poured that mug into a second mug, now you have what's called a kli shlishi. You now have the third vessel. And here, even though there are a couple of other opinions, we generally, one can certainly be comfortable relying on the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who held that is completely non-cookable material. Once you have the hot water that went from the urn, which was directly in the fire, and it went from the urn into one mug, and then from that mug into a third, or a second mug, which is now its third vessel, the original vessel, the first mug, the second mug, it cannot cook. Period, across the board. It just doesn't work. It doesn't have the ability, the intensity or the heat to actually cook, which means you can do whatever you want in it. You want to make tea, you want to make coffee, in a kli shlishi, you can add your lemon slice directly to it. That does not have the status of something cookable on Shabbos, and whatever you wanted to add to it, you could.
Can you use like instant things? Like
yes.
Instant
oatmeal? No, oatmeal is a separate problem.
Like instant mashed potatoes?
So those are all separate problems. So those are going back to letter, I don't know if it was a C or D, there's another one of the malachas, another one of the prohibitions is called lush, which is kneading, which is taking flour and water. When you add the flour and the water, you create a new entity called dough, which is one of the av malachas, which is taking a solid, which are separate particles, and a combiner, be it in the form of an oil or a water or mayonnaise or something like that, and now you have a new entity which is inseparable again, inseparable. So making oatmeal and instant mashed potatoes is that problem, in which you've now created a new thick entity out of which was once a dry solid. You've added a liquid and it's something new.
Can you
put
it around it?
No.
You can't make that.
What, lush? I want to answer that quickly. I think lush. No, you can make, yeah, you can do that. That's far enough into the baking process. You could do that on Yosef because you could bake bread. That would be okay. Now, there are different categories. If you go back over TorahMediaAtlanta.com, on all of our discussions on lush, there are two different types of lishas. There's what's called the lisha ova and a lisha raka, thick mixture and a thinner mixture. And the thinner mixtures you can make on Shabbos with the shinoi. So there are ways to make tuna fish, certain types of products on Shabbos in a way to do it. Oatmeal, in particular, fits into a category that is not allowed to be made on Shabbos for separate reasons. Mm-hmm. So even though there's no bishul, even though if you're using a kli shlishi, you've avoided the cooking problem.
Right, even if you're making it sounds like rice syrup for baby, and you're using cold water.
Correct. So then you have to go back over that, and there are ways to do that. There are ways to do that on Shabbos in terms of how you mix, how you stir, how you put the two together. But it's even if you've taken it out of the bishul problem, you still run into that problem.
Okay.
And that's why Hilchos Shabbos is so complex, because there are all these intersecting issues, and even when you deal with one, you always have to be aware of some of the other. Yeah?
The plastic lime or lemon that you can buy, you can't squirt that to a kli shlishi.
Sure, why not? Kli shlishi, doesn't cook.
But you can't squeeze a lemon in that.
Yeah. No, that's because of not, again, that's because of sefirish. That's because of schita, of squeezing a lemon. But that's not because of a bishul issue.
Plastic thing you actually could squeeze.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right, you can put that into your cliche issue with 100%. You probably can even put that into a klisheni, because it's a liquid, and it probably would be analogous to water, which the Gemara says does not cook in a klisheni. But if that frightens you, you could put it in a klisheni for sure.
So you could change the form of klisheni too? Put a hard apple into hot water for an older person to soften it up.
Right. No, it's because that it halachically, even though you changed that form, you didn't cook it. In the same way as the tea might be, you cannot cook. And it's just not a mechanism of cooking. You end up with this interesting halachic loophole in that sense of you didn't cook. The prohibition of changing the form is not called changing the form, it's called cooking, and you didn't cook. Even the other sense. So I'm pretty sure, I'll add that to my list of things to check in, which I usually end up with a nice long list every time I do this. I'm pretty sure that would be okay. I'm pretty sure that'd be okay. You know, it's even like taking oatmeal, for example, which again is not a, like, I just made oatmeal. How can you say you didn't cook it? You have another issue of kneading, but it's not called cooking just because of it. But I will check into the softening app. I'm pretty sure it's okay. Okay, so as far as finishing up letter F, so if you add water to the second mug, which now is your kli shlishi, then you can put your tea bag directly into that. Now the only issue with the tea bag that's also mentioned, again, how, as we intersect different malachas, if you pick the tea bag up and let everything drip out, now you have another issue of a borer, of a selecting issue, in which you're using the tea bag to keep in the leaves and allow the essence to drip out, and you're using it as a sifter or as a sieve, and then that's a separate issue. So even after you put the tea bag into your kli shlishi, which now as far as cooking goes, you're fine. If you like leaving your tea bag in there, that's great. If you like taking it out, use a spoon to scoop the whole thing out and dispose of it, but that's not a cooking issue anymore. That's now, again, a boer issue. You don't want to pick the tea bag up and let everything drip out because you basically created a sieve sifter situation in which you're holding back the things that you want and letting other things come out. And that's as far as the tea bag goes. Yeah. So there are those who are machmir on what we call kali habishol in a kli shlishi. So there are those who would say not to, and that's why it's probably out there that they don't want to use a tea bag at all, which is partly because of the boer issue that people don't want to get involved in, and it's partly because there are those who say by a kli shlishi. Rav Moshe Feinstein held that a kli shlishi is just not mevashel, and he was totally fine with that. I can't tell you if that's specifically, but I know that he is quoted as saying it's just not mevashel. But there are those who argue on that, and that's why you'll hear those who don't make tea bags, those who don't make tea even in a kli shlishi. But you can certainly rely on that. Yeah.
Can you then reuse that tea bag for a second cup of tea?
Yeah, because that tea bag in another kli shlishi, because that tea bag now has a halachic status of not being cooked, and therefore your tea. I'll tell you an interesting thing which I saw. So this tea, let's say you did that, right? You took from the urn into your mug, you poured your mug into a second mug. Now I have a kli shlishi. I put my tea bag in. Take my tea bag out with my spoon. Everything is great. I enjoy my hot cup of tea, and I'm in the clear. Now that tea bag has a status of not being cooked because it was immersed into a kli shlishi, and my tea has a status of not being cooked because it was also cooked in a kli shlishi. An hour goes by, my tea cools down to about 90 degrees, and I say this isn't good enough. I want hotter water. If I were to now add directly from my urn into my into that water, I would then be cooking the even though, as we're going to get to, even though the water would not be a problem because the water is still warm and the water had once been cooked, the water would not be a problem, but the tea that comprises the water has never been cooked, and that would become a problem. That was good. It really wasn't sure what I just did, because I dealt with something which I haven't yet said, but I was going to say, so I thought I had, but the tea is not cooked. The tea is not considered cooked because it's in a kli shlishi. Okay, that actually gets us to the next step. G. You cannot cook a solid food twice. Ain bishul achar bishul. We have a halachic principle that says Once the food is cooked, I have my luxury cooker, I have my noodle cooker, so it's cooked. So you can't cook it again. You can put it back in the microwave, you can put it back in the oven, and you can reheat it. But you can't cook something again, in a halachic sense, on Shabbos, once it's already been cooked. So that if a food has been cooked, and it's a solid food, we can take off of the equation. Again, we're going to get to more things in terms of when we're talking about Shabbos day, taking things out of the refrigerator, and putting it back on a block, or putting it somewhere else. Cooking is not an issue once it's already been cooked. Your chicken, your kugel, all of those foods that once they've been cooked once can't be cooked again. Because reheating it will never fundamentally change the item. It only adds heat to the item. But adding heat to dough fundamentally changes it. It's now cooked. Adding heat to noodle kugel just makes it warm and a little bit dry. But that's not considered fundamentally changing it, and therefore it's not considered cooking. That's just to wake you up a little bit, just to see if anyone's paying attention. Yeah.
Wait, but even if like, you have a piece of meat, and let's say you're going to like it rare.
Okay.
If you warm it up and you warm it too long, it does cook it.
Okay, because it never was fully cooked in the first place.
But that's considered cooked, though.
Right. So in other words, so that's where, that's an excellent question in terms of it. Things being cooked, let's say there's a scale of 0 to 100, mm-hmm. So a third, let's say, you know, at 33, but is already now considered cooked, that if you did that, so then you'd be in violation of cooking on Shabbos. But still from 33 to 100 is still also cooking, that if you were to take it from 33 to 100 on Shabbos, you'd also still be considered cooking because you have furthered it along the process. So it's true that we deal with it on those different scales, meaning if there was, like, we would say, did you violate Shabbos? Well, did you get up to 33? No, I did. I got to 35. You violated Shabbos. But if you took something from 35 and moved it to a 40, you also cooked on Shabbos.
But that's not a problem.
That is a problem.
So you said there's no cooking after cooking.
If you got to 100, and it is fully cooked, this chicken...
So you can't serve raw, like... Where you can't re-warm rare meat on
Shabbos. That, right. In other words, that's when we're going to get to that in terms of adding, putting it back on the stove, depending on how you did it, if you further the cooking process of something that was not fully cooked, 100%, that would be an issue. That's the issue with the chulin pot I was starting with in terms of stirring, putting the lid back on. If that pot is not yet fully cooked, if you start stirring it, you're furthering that cooking process, and that's for sure a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
You can't measure temperature.
That's right.
So you can't say it's whatever temperature.
Right.
So you can only eye it.
Okay.
You know, like the meat or whatever.
Well, temperatures with liquids. With solids, it's how much is it cooked? What percentage? Is it a third? Is it a half? Is it beyond that?
You can only go with your fingers, you know, like it's hot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why the sages in the Gemara don't give you 110, 115 degrees, because they're dealing with a time without thermometers like that. Like, if you put your finger in and you pull it back, that's hot. That's exactly why they gave. That's how they defined what's considered cooking. When it comes to liquid, solids is how cooked is it?
You said, yeah, as long as it's a third cooked, you can put it back in, and it's not cooking. But if you took it from rare to well,
no. If it's a third, again, this is why I apologize. If this is confusing.
It's medium, if it's 50%,
yeah, you can't.
If it's well,
that's a problem. You can't, anything until it gets to 100, there's a phrase the Gemara uses of mitstamik viralo,
so
where you, if you continue to cook, it gets worse from this point on. There's a period where something is, it's a third, it's you know, two-fifths, a three, it's beyond that point, but it's still getting better. The longer I leave it in, the better it gets. And then you hit a point where, now the longer it's in there, the worse it gets. Right. So if you're actively doing something which is at the stage of still getting it better, it's a problem. Once it gets to the stage where it's not going to get any better, that's when we say you just can't cook. Even if you took it out of the refrigerator and put it back in the oven, you can't cook it anymore. It's just, it's already been cooked.
Well, from a practical standpoint,
mm-hmm.
if it's edible,
yeah,
like rare, medium, or well,
uh-huh.
if you put it back in the oven to heat it up, if you're going to eat it, you're cooking it. If you're not going to eat it, because in your mind it's overdone, then you're not cooking, but you wouldn't do that because you want to eat it.
I'm not sure if I understood that, but what if I just wanted it hot?
You like rare meat.
I just want it hot.
You like rare meat. So you always cook it at 40%, okay?
Yeah.
And it's been cooked.
Yeah.
And now you want to put it in the oven. If you put it in the oven, it's going to get to 60%.
And that would be a problem, 100%.
But you wouldn't eat it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. But that's agreed. Everyone agree. I'm cooking the meat. Doesn't matter if I wouldn't eat it. I'm cooking the meat.
Right.
Yeah. That's still cooking it.
So in reality, you can't put it back in the oven.
That's correct. If you had a piece of meat that was only cooked 40%, 100%, you got that. You got it right.
Cooked 100%, you can't put it in the oven.
No, once after 100, now it gets worse. Now it begins to get dried out.
That's what I'm saying. So why would you put it in the oven?
I just want it hot.
But you're not going to eat it because it's nasty.
No, I'm not going to. In other words, it's cold. It's in my oven, right? It came out of my refrigerator. It's Shabbos day. I want to eat a warm piece of meat, not a cold piece of meat. So I put it. I figure out how I'm going to put it back on my blech. I am not dealing with a cooking problem because I can't cook it again. Halachically, it's been cooked. It's only going to get warm and then worse, not any better. Yeah.
Can you put it in if you have that meat that's 40% done and you turn off your oven before Shabbos and stick it in the oven? So it's not an open flame, but it's in a warm oven that's off that you can open up after you know Shabbos starts to serve. It's going to kind of continue cooking, but it's not on an active flame.
Yeah, you're talking on Shabbos morning already?
No, I'm talking about Friday night. Right before you light candles, you stick it into the...
Right, yeah, that's fine.
Hot.
Right.
But it's hot.
Yeah.
And even if it kind of continues cooking...
Right, because your action was done, right? In that situation, the issues we look at are you cooking? So no, because everything that I'm doing is before Shabbos. So then you have the issues of, which we're not even going to get to tonight, I see, of leaving things in an open flame. So an oven would have that problem, but you're going to be beyond the point where that would be. You haven't even gotten to that yet. So you really wouldn't have much of an issue in that scenario.
Even if it continues cooking.
Correct.
Okay.
But I get lost on that. If it's not quite cooked, 40%, 50%, 60%, you can't put that in the oven to be further cooked with the oven on
Right, she's talking about Friday, before Shabbos.
She's talking about when?
Friday. She's putting in the oven on Friday. She puts it in the oven, she turns the oven off, she lights the Shabbos candles.
Right, because the oven was off. But if the oven was on...
And for sure not. Right.
So do you absolutely have to cook something to 100%?
No.
Pardon me?
No.
So where is it? Where's the place?
That's what we're going to get. That's the next topic is what you can do leaving something over an open flame to continue cooking on Shabbos.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Before Shabbos starts, before I light, I lower my oven to the lowest temperature.
Okay.
170. So on Shabbos day, if I have something that has no gravy, I could stick it in.
We're talking about putting something back in the oven, which is going to be, in other words, as far as the issue is cooking, it's not going to be a cooking issue. We have a separate rabbinic problem of taking something out of your refrigerator and putting it in an oven. But we're just talking about, are you cooking the food? The first question you always have to ask is, am I cooking something? So the answer to that is, if it's coming out of my refrigerator and was cooked before Shabbos, the answer to that is no. Great. We're covered on that. Can I put it in my oven on Shabbos? The answer to that is also going to be no, but for a different reason, which we're going to learn about next week. Yeah, you better come back next week. Okay, but I need to get through this part. We got to finish up. Okay, now the only way that it's permitted to reheat something where there's no problem of cooking is if you're cooking it in the same way that it was originally cooked in. Meaning there are different ways. There's cooking in water, and then there's baking with heat but without water. So something that was cooked can be recooked, because once it's cooked, putting a knedel, so you cooked them on Friday, and on Shabbos you want to drop it back into your urn, even if you were to take your knedel out of your refrigerator, open up your urn, and drop your knedel into your hot water urn, you haven't done anything to violate cooking on Shabbos, because the knedel was already cooked before Shabbos, done, it's already cooked once. Now you couldn't do that for other reasons, but there's no problem with cooking, because it's already been cooked once. Now, so this becomes very, very practical. Matzah, challah, chicken, those are all baked items. Assuming we're not boiling our chicken, but that would be a separate. So you put your chicken in the oven. You have matzah, you have your challah, all of those things are either baked or roasted, and therefore, if you were to reheat them, you couldn't recook, you can't re-bake matzah or challah. It's already been baked once. Which means if you were to put it on a blech on Shabbos day, there's no problem with that because it's already been cooked once. Now, how do you get it onto the blech? That's going to be next week's discussion. But as far as am I cooking, my challah goes out of the counter on Shabbos, it goes onto a blech. Did you cook the challah? There's no cooking that took place. On a biblical level, there's nothing to talk about because it's already been baked once. You can't bake it a second time. So that is a question. That's an excellent question which is discussed. It's a machlokas amongst the poskim whether or not taking challah to toast is a new, is changing it some way. There are some folks that say that you couldn't do that because creating it from toast would actually be considered something is something fundamentally different than challah. There's challah, and then there's toast. And
it's getting worse.
What's that?
So that's
the debate in terms of whether or not toast specifically is something different than challah. In other words, it's like bread, and there's like it's a different entity. That's the discussion. Whether if you say it's the same thing, then you're right. You couldn't bake it again. But if you say that toast is something different. I wouldn't do it.
Forget the great rabbi.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. Yeah, I wouldn't do it. But let me hold on a second. What about putting challah into a water base, into your soup? So here we have a separate issue. We now have cooking after baking. It's true the challah has been baked once, but it never was baked or cooked in a water base, and now I'm putting it into a hot water base. So if you were to put it into a klisheni, so a klisheni, meaning it came directly from, you have a, let's say you have a mug that came directly from an urn, a tot, and you wanted to dip your challah into that, that would be a problem because our klisheni, the only thing that we say it does not cook are water, things which are very difficult to cook, but other things we're concerned with, so therefore putting challah into a klisheni would be considered a problem because now you're taking something which was baked and dipping it into something which is a hot water, and that would be a problem. But your soup bowl on your dining room table is almost always not a klisheni, it's actually a klishlishi because you have your hot pot of soup on the stove. Take that off the stove, take a ladle, you put your ladle into your soup, and now the soup in your ladle is now in a klisheni. You pour your ladle into your bowl, and your bowl is now a klishlishi. Klishlishi, Rav Moshe told us already, doesn't cook. So if you put your challah into your soup bowl, you are not doing anything wrong. Yeah.
What about
bagels? Right. So that would be even easier. That you could even put into a klisheni.
Okay.
Although the fact that it's baked at the end, I saw someone was talking about a potato kugel where the potatoes are boiled and then they're baked and we give it a status of being baked. So why don't we do the same thing about the same thing about a bagel? Probably the same thing. It's boiled for so short and then it's actually baked. It probably has the status of being baked. But in any case, in a klisheni, you would be fine.
Right.
Now the only issue with this ladle business, a lot of talk about ladles, that the ladle might itself still maintain the kli rishon status of the soup, but that would only be if you actually keep the ladle in the soup for an extended period of time before serving with it. But the reason why I said it's almost never done, the way that most people serve soup is you take a ladle and you don't keep it in the soup bowl, it's on the table, then you start dipping and serving and dipping and serving. As long as you're doing that, the ladle is going to have a status of a separate klisheni because the soup has now been removed from the pot, it's now in the ladle, goes from the ladle into your bowl, and your bowl is a klishlishi, and your klishlishi doesn't cook, and you could put soup nuts, you could put challah, you could put things into your bowl. There are those who are stringent on this, but it is, there are, Rav Moshe would say it's fine, Chafetz Chaim said it's fine, and the Mishnah Berurah, Rav Shimon Eider says that it's fine. It's a klishlishi, and you can't cook in a klishlishi. So even though many people are very careful not to put challah into their soup bowl, many actually people would say that it is totally fine. So say, yeah.
What is the definition of roasted?
Where like cooked over an open fire, as opposed to just roasted and baking are very very similar in that regard. Roasted is often actually put into a fire, as opposed to just cooked over an open fire, but it's very halachically it's almost always they're treated a little bit different for a different sleeve versus afia. But it's like you would roast a piece of meat and you would bake a piece of bread. But in this sense, they're dealt with in the same.
We always do that. You take a soup out of the glove, and let me have the glove, which is something we do lately. And we have every serving, we will leave the pot covered, and we keep our ladles in the pot.
Okay, so. So that's where there's an issue. The area where people would be concerned with dipping their challah into their soup is if you have the ladle in the soup pot for an extended time where, but it's probably floating on top even as opposed to actually being immersed in. Right. So that, the plastic one is going to float to the top usually. So, I mean, generally, if you wanted to, you know, that's where the issue would be, where there's a major discussion in the postgame whether or not a ladle has its own status or it becomes really part of the pot itself. But that's only if it stays in there. So if you don't do that, if you take the ladle out, then you'd have not, and certainly as soon as, and even then, it only would be the first bowl. Like once it comes out and you start pouring and you put it back in, so then already, yeah, and now you're dealing with it in as a klish lishi, which is why you could put your noodles and things in. Okay, that's basically with solids. Liquids, meaning solids can't be cooked twice. Your challah can't be cooked twice as long as you're doing it in the same sense. Liquids, however, can, because what is the definition of cooking a liquid? The definition of the change in the liquid is taking it from being cold to being hot. When it cools back down again, you're in the exact same place that you started. And therefore a liquid, even if it's been cooked once it cools down, can actually be cooked again a second time. And therefore, if you have your hot coffee, your tea, your soup, and it is now cooled down completely, if you were to reheat that, then that would be considered cooking a second time. With the exception of the situation in which the drink that you had is still a little bit warm. If it maintains some of the warmth of its original cooking, meaning you took from the urn, you put it in your mug, you have your hot tea, you have your hot coffee, it's been 20-30 minutes, and now it's a little bit warm still. As long as it's still warm, you can add hot water to that, and it's considered still cooked. It's only when it completely cools down that then you'd have an issue of possibly recooking that, and you would not put water directly from the urn into that mug once it's cooled down, because now it's already cold. But if it's still warm, then you do not have a problem with that as well. Now, the issue where this becomes significant, and with this we'll close for tonight, is on the top of the second page. We're going to talk a lot about next week taking your chicken, your meat, your kugels out of the fridge and putting it on a blech. And what it is, how do you do that, what can you do? Now again, the first question we talk about, where I'm going to get to that, is can I take something out of my refrigerator and put it on a blech? The first question is, am I going to be doing any cooking? Because if there's any cooking going on, there's nothing to talk about, I can't do it. If we can say that there's no cooking going on, now we can talk about, on the rabbinic level, how do I get food out of my refrigerator and get it warm on Shabbos? So the issue is, if you have liquid that's coming out of your refrigerator, and that's going to be going on to the blech and getting hot, so a liquid, even though it has been cooked already on Erev Shabbos, but if you reheat a liquid, then that's considered cooking it for the first time. So even though you could take your potato kugel or your chicken out of the refrigerator, and if you start putting it on a blech, am I cooking? You're never going to be cooking, because it's already been cooked once before. When it comes to doing that to a liquid, the liquid, if you were to try to do that with a soup or something like that, when you reheated it, you would actually be considered cooking on Shabbos as you did that. So this becomes an issue when you have a solid and there's some liquid there also. I have some gravy, I have some things on the bottom of my solid. Am I going to be able to take that out and heat that up? Congealed fats and gravy are not a problem. Those are considered still solids. And there has to be an accumulation of liquid to be considered an actual liquid. This we're going to talk about more when we actually get into the practical applications of reheating food, Mirtz Hashem, next week. As we talk about that, we will get into these aspects of how much liquid it becomes a problem when I take it out of my refrigerator, put it onto the blech. If it's a solid, I know that I'm not cooking at least. If there's a liquid, I am. How much liquid has to be there? Yeah.
Are there different laws pertaining to a Shabbos oven, the controlled oven?
As far as putting things back in?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that in terms of how do we reheat. Tonight I really was laying a lot of the groundwork as far as we can't talk about, Shabbos morning, which is the big issue of getting things out of the refrigerator and getting them hot, until we deal with the question of I need to make sure that I'm not actually cooking.
But is it equivalent to a blech? Because
you have an open flame underneath. No, it's not equivalent to a blech.
Okay.
Yeah, it will not be, because the blech is covering the flame, and an oven doesn't have anything covering the flame. Or the heating element is considered open. Okay, that will be it for tonight, and we will get into the other issues, Mirtz Hashem, next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.